Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Elaine Yaley Bowen, and I am the lay leader for today's service. I am joined by the Reverend Melissa Carville-Ziemer, who is serving as our worship associate today, our Director of Religious Education, Karen Lapidus, our Music Director, Hal Walker, the Fallow Time Folk Orchestra, and a very special guest who we will introduce to you shortly.
In the Unitarian Universalist tradition, the path to becoming a minister is a long road. It involves a degree from an accredited theological school, which is a 3-year degree, a Master of Divinity. It involves a unit of clinical pastoral education in a hospital or some other similar setting. It involves exams at the beginning and the end of the process, and it involves most especially an internship with a congregation. And that internship must either be full-time for a year or the equivalent, half-time for 2 years. We have the great good fortune for the first time in my knowledge in our history to be having an intern joining us here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. Dave Clements will be beginning with us in September, half-time for 2 academic years. He is a student at Meadville Lombard Theological School and a member of the West Shore Unitarian Universalist Church in Rocky River, Ohio. This is his second career. His first career is in business consulting, and he continues to own a company that provides consulting services in the Cleveland area. So as he works his way through his path to ministerial formation, he'll be maintaining a small role with his business consulting, going to school part-time, and serving here as the intern minister part-time. And this role here of serving as an intern minister is critical to the formation process because it's been said, and I think it's true, that good congregations make good ministers and good ministers make good congregations. It's a mutual process. And the very first opportunity that someone has to learn how to be a minister is not in the classroom, because that's academic, that's theoretical. It is in the congregation that a person has the opportunity to begin applying what they've learned and to get feedback from people with whom they are in service. So it's a very important role, and every one of you will have the opportunity to help be a teacher. That's what it means to be a teaching congregation. It's an important role. It's a rewarding role, and I am very excited about the opportunity that we have to be working with our future intern minister, Dave Clements. He's here today to meet you, so I hope that you will give him a warm welcome.
Thank you, and just let me say I'm delighted to be here and look forward to September. For our chalice, I chose a reading today. It's number 448 in our book. We gather this hour as people of faith, with joys and sorrows, gifts and needs. We light this beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning, as celebration of the life we share together.
wonder. Life is calling you. Love is calling you. Justice is calling you. Wonder, wonder and follow. Your heart's own song can show you the way. Their songs can guide you too. And sometimes, if you're quiet, you might hear that still, small voice. Follow, follow and doubt. No doubt there will be days when you cannot hear their songs, cannot even hear your own. No doubt there will be days when you feel quite alone. Doubt, doubt and faith, both of them essential for deepening the call, interpreting the call. Faith, faith and fellowship. Gathered here, we create beloved community, people you can count on to keep you company as you try to be faithful to that which matters most of all. Come, let us worship together.
We offer coming of age to our younger high school youth every 2 to 3 years, and this is one of those years, and things are really ramping up towards May 3rd, which is coming of age Sunday, the Sunday when our 9th and 10th graders share their personal statements of faith with all of you. And I remember my own coming of age, but we called it confirmation in the Methodist Church. We attended classes on Saturday morning, which were led by the minister, and we did this for just a couple of months. And during our coming of age Sunday, we all sat in the front of the sanctuary, and all the girls were dressed in white dresses. And our minister asked us questions about our faith, and then we were to state the answers verbally. And the correct answers to those questions were exactly what we had been taught, down to the word. There were no variations allowed. And I nailed it. I got a perfect score. I was so proud that I knew everything there was to know about what I was supposed to believe. So about 20 years go by, and I happen upon Unitarian Universalism, and then I realized that I knew very little about what I really believed. Unitarian Universalists promote the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. That is our fourth principle. And to me, that says two things. It means that we are free to examine and discover our own personal beliefs without anyone else imposing theirs upon us. But it also means that we are responsible to do this work. It is on each and every one of us to examine, to think, to wrestle with ideas, and to decide what to believe. And our entire religious education program is designed with this shared goal in mind. Unlike the religious education of my childhood, as loving as it was, we do not feed our children the answers to life's big questions. So here's what happens in our classrooms. And children, listen carefully in case I leave something out. So after the children are sung out of the sanctuary, we go up the stairs. The children go into their classrooms. They light their classroom chalice, and they share their joys and concerns. And the grades 3 to 5 at this point usually rings the bell. You've probably heard it, but the rope has broken, so that won't happen for a while. And then there is this story. And then after this story, there's discussion, because yes, even our youngest UUs love to engage in discussion. And the teachers ask open-ended questions. What do you think? What would you have done? What was the right in that story? What was the wrong in that story? And the responses of the children are affirmed. Sometimes gentle guidance is offered, but our children are always honored for thinking for themselves. So by the time that they are in high school and they enroll in our coming of age program, they know how to look to themselves to discover the answers to the question, what do you believe? So let us go forth, children and teachers, and find those answers to our own questions of faith.
Each week when we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry, of this community. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care all who need our love and support. It is my pleasure to announce this morning that Jacqueline and Justin Chekai are celebrating the birth of their second child. William Joseph Chekai was born this week, and he will meet with his sister Isabel, who is 2 years old. Mother, father, and all are well. Spirit of life and love, spirit of mystery and wonder, we are grateful for this day. We are blessed in this country of ours to have this freedom of religious assembly this morning, where we can both silently and in joyous voice and song express our faith. So many in the world do not. So many are persecuted. So many are murdered in the name of other gods, other religions. So many who simply want to express their belief of their innermost spirit. They cry to us, may we always be a free and opening faith, welcome to all who come here. In the words of Saint Francis of Assisi, may we always remember that we are blessed to preach the gospel at all times, using words if we must. Amen, and blessed be. Our first reading this morning is from one of the Unitarian Universalist Association meditation manuals that you can find in our library. Invisible, by the Reverend Gordon B. McKeeman. Seeing is believing. I suppose so, but that's not all there is to it. There's so much reality that is unseen, invisible. My living room is awash in things that arrive by routes invisible. The television set offers pictures of events transpiring half a world away. Almost instantaneously, through the air and space above it, often reflected, so I'm told, by satellite, also mostly invisible. A flood, a famine, a volcanic eruption, a coronation, a funeral, and inauguration, a birth, a battle, a peace conference, a festival in full color. I don't see it in the air. I do, however, believe it, sight unseen. Oh, but I must take my pills. That even launches another unseen process. How my body knows where to send all those tiny particles, so insignificant save for the expense, to nourish, stimulate, hold in check, destroy, inhibit, heal, supplement, in a vast invisible process that eludes seeing, even seeing by microscopes. Not seeing, I do believe. I drive my car and its radio plucks music, traffic advisory, weather reports, the latest news out of the ether on command. There's not just one message lurking invisibly all around me, but a whole catalog of choices to be selected by the twist of a dial or the press of a button. I don't understand, nor do I see them. But I do believe. Human beings, too, send messages that arise from invisible wellsprings. I wonder whence cometh the tenacity, the courage, the tenderness, the aspirations that are the invisible sources of perseverance, quiet bravery in the face of pain, love for those who are sometimes hard to love, hope that prevails over dark despair. Whence they come, I cannot see, but I do believe. Some wise person once defined religion as an invisible means of support. Fortunately, there is great power arising from invisible sources. May it be your good fortune on this quite ordinary day to be able to believe in some invisible things that have extraordinary consequences.
Our second reading requires a little imagination. Elaine selected this little summer poem touching the subject of faith, mindful of the cold and snow, and mindful that sometimes it can lift our spirits a little to remember that spring will come and summer will follow. So perhaps the light of the sun streaming through our windows this morning can help your imagination as you consider this little summer poem touching the subject of faith by Mary Oliver. Every summer I listen and look under the sun's brass and even into the moonlight, but I can't hear anything. I can't see anything. Not the pale roots digging down, nor the green stalks muscling up, nor the leaves dampening their damp pleats, nor the tassels making, nor the shucks, nor the cobs. And still, every day, the leafy fields grow taller and thicker. Green gowns lofting up in the night, showered with silk. And so, every summer, I fail as a witness, seeing nothing. I am deaf, too, to the damp tick of the leaves, the tapping of downwardness from the banyan feet, all of it happening beyond any seeable proof or hearable hum. And therefore, let the immeasurable come. Let the unknowable touch the buckle of my spine. Let the wind turn in the trees and the mystery hidden in the dirt swing through the air. How could I look at anything in this world and tremble and grip my hands over my heart? What should I fear? One morning, in the leafy green ocean, the honeycomb of the corn's beautiful body is sure to be there.
It is sure to be there. The seed for this service was planted 14 years ago in 2001 when I first came to this church, an empty soul, a broken, unchurched, former wounded Catholic and militant atheist. I knew there was something missing in my life. I did not know what it was. I was seeking, I was searching, I was desperately looking for something. The first year or so that I was here, even though I knew I was at home, I was not at peace. I was not at peace with language. With religious language. I had no positive meanings, and there were words that I cringed at. I would stop singing a hymn when God appeared, as it does in hymns, and I was uncomfortable. I squirmed. I did not know what to do with these feelings about words like holy and sacred and prayer, much less faith. In 2003, there was a letter from the president of the Unitarian Universalist Association president, who was at that time the Reverend Bill Sinkford, who was the first African-American ever elected into that position. He had preached a sermon in Fort Worth, Texas in 2002 about the language of reverence, and he wrote about it in the UU World in 2003. He noted that our seven principles include no traditional religious words, and he questioned if the language of our principles was really sufficient to describe and nurture the reality of our religious experiences. He questioned, did we need to expand our use of religious language? Parts of that message stuck with me. For many, and for him, there was a lot of backlash. There was shock and fear and a lot of unrest. Much of what he said became misinterpreted. But he persevered, and there was also, I found in my readings, a great deal of gratitude from many ministers who felt that too many words were off limits to use in our UU congregations. I remember here in the early 2000s when there were many members of our congregation who identified as humanist. And there are many who still do. But there were words that were somewhat off limits to use. And I recall an elder gentleman who has since passed taking our minister, the Reverend Julianne Silberman Bond, to task for using the word spirituality in a service. And he upbraided her because he felt that that word has no meaning in Unitarian Universalism. Similarly, we seldom had God talk. We did not speak of prayer or sin or some of the other loaded religious words that sometimes people come here trying to avoid. We know that words are powerful things. They can hurt. And it's very difficult to undo the hurt that words do. For many of us, they conjure up past religious experiences that we are trying to work through, we are trying to heal ourselves from. I believe that we, as Unitarian Universalists, need to define language of reverence through our own religious exploration. And that's what I did. And in the mid-2000s, there was an adult religious exploration offering called, and a lot of people think it's BYOB, but it's not, it's BYOT, Building Your Own Theology. And it's a 10-session course, if you will, with a manual, a workbook, facilitators, and a group of anywhere from 6 to 10 individuals who meet every other week to discuss our beliefs, defining our beliefs. It was so helpful to me and was so meaningful that since that time, I facilitated the course 3 times for different groups of people here in this church. Which brings me to why this service and why this word. Since Melissa came to our church, I have been rather systematically working through my comfort level with a variety of different terms that are language of reverence and have made my own definitions and made my own peace with them. I am fascinated not only by language and defining things on my own terms, but what really drove this one home was I overheard several years ago an older female congregant who I had served on a committee with, expressing extreme discomfort with the word faith. She couldn't really explain what she meant other than she felt that it somehow meant that we all believe the same thing. And we know that with perhaps 50 to 75 Unitarian Universalists in a room, there are that many, if not more, definitions of the word. In 2012, I was fortunate to attend my first General Assembly in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it was a remarkable experience. And one of the little nuggets I came away with was this small $12 investment in a book called Fluent in Faith. It is remarkable as a Unitarian Universalist embrace of religious language. And it talks about all kinds of things: God and covenant, doctrine, sacrament, prayer, blessing, grace, and yes, faith. Last year, I surprised myself in self-describing in a piece of writing on Facebook, no less, as a devout and faithful Unitarian Universalist. What a difference from the militant atheism of my 20s. It has been a journey of faith. On the front of your order of service, Judy Brannan, who designs them, put down some definitions of faith from the dictionary. And you can find all different kinds of definitions: a system of religious belief, confidence or trust in a person or thing, belief that is not based on proof. All these dictionary definitions are true to one degree or another, but somehow I find them unsatisfying, and I don't really feel they tell the whole story. Many people will use the terms faith and belief synonymously, and truth be told, they can be, but I don't subscribe to that. It sells faith far short. In Fluent in Faith, the author, Jean Harrison Nuajar, reminds us that belief lives in the mind. It is a cognitive, intellectual dimension of religion that is made up of ideas. Many, if not all, of our personal beliefs can be stated in fairly clear, concise language. For example, using our principles, we can say, I believe in the inherent worth and dignity of all persons. I believe in, with a statement following that. Beliefs are fairly easily identifiable, but underlying belief is faith, a deeper dimension and more difficult to define. Gandhi said, faith is not something to grasp. It is a state to grow into. This is the place where the definition of faith becomes intensely personal and somewhat at the limits of mere words. Nuajar suggests that faith is a profound existential sense of trust that lives in the spiritual center of our being. What is the spiritual center of our being? She would argue, and so would I, that it is not belief which comes from the mind, that the mind is not our spiritual center, but it is somewhere else that may be described as the soul or the spirit. How does one know where that place is or what it feels like? I can only speak from my own experience. And I have a great affinity for water. I am a water sign. I am a child of the ocean. I grew up on the Atlantic. I am most at home anywhere where there is water. My children and my husband and I often travel up to Lake Erie after Sunday service during the summertime. And there was one Sunday in the late 2000s. It was a very, very hot day in July. It was very crowded, very busy, and I was standing in the lake up to my waist, and I closed my eyes and raised them toward the sun to feel the warmth. And then this very remarkable thing happened. I felt a connection from and through the sun to the air to the water through my feet up through my heart and back to the sky. It was a peak experience, and it said to me that I belong. I am one with this universe. I am here for a reason. There is a connection that follows through everything. And I am here because I belong here. Mary Oliver wrote in her poem that all of it is happening beyond any seeable proof or hearable hum. William Newton Clark defines faith as the daring of the soul to go farther than it can see. As seekers, searchers, questioners, wonderers, wanderers, we somehow dive in to try and make meaning of that which we cannot see, that which is that innermost personal definition of our faith. We find it in time, at times it is beyond our own language of reverence. That is faith. As Unitarian Universalists who believe that service is our law, ours is a collective faith of and in action. That is central to our identity. We are doers. How we act, the causes we support, the energy we expend, the resources we allocate are all expressions of our individual and collective faith as a community. We know our faith in action is important because, in the words of Helen Keller, faith is the strength by which a shattered world shall emerge into the light. Amen, and blessed be.
Will the ushers please come forward? Each week we invite your contribution of financial gifts in support of the work of this place. And when we do this, we are not inviting you to keep the lights on or pay for the heat or pay the salaries of the staff who work here, important as all those things are. We are inviting you to invest in our ministries. And the ministry here is not limited to me. I have a ministry, but it is just one among many ministries that constitute the work of this place. All week, I was away at a continuing education event, and here, people gathered time and again to practice their ministries. There were multiple committee and team meetings, people gathering to work on preparing for our expansion and our capital campaign, there were multiple rehearsals of musicians preparing to create beautiful music for our services. Elaine was working to clarify the words she would speak as she told you about her faith journey this morning. Our coming-of-age leaders worked to prepare the lessons that they would lead our phenomenal youth through yesterday morning, and their mentors were preparing to share of themselves. All of these are ministries, and when we take our offering each week, this is what we're supporting. All of our ministries.
Go now in peace with these words from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Faith is the first factor in a life devoted to service. Without it, nothing is possible. With it, nothing is impossible. Amen and blessed be.